Kaya Talk on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.
But an important conversation we should also be having right now is around the judgment that the Constitutional Court will be releasing tomorrow on the rescission application by Jacob Zuma. Is this an appeal by a different name, or was this a rescission application true to its definition? Joining me on this conversation right now is political analyst, broadcaster, and of late, very, very hot podcaster, Eusebius Makaiza. Eusebius, thank you so much for joining us here on Point of View.
It's only a pleasure, Oliver. Thanks so much for having me on.
Is this an appeal by a different name?
Look, it is. You know, if anyone who feels that there was a material error in law when a case had gone against them wishes to have it reviewed, then they should have the opportunity to do so. On the merits of this one, I just don't think that that will succeed, and we can talk about the merits in a second.
Yeah.
It is an appeal smuggled in as a rescinding application, and those are technicalities the public don't have to worry about. The bottom line is that we need to assess the arguments that were made, and the arguments on side Jacob Zuma are not very strong in my view.
You know, a lot of people might be thinking that this judgment is a little too late. I mean, Jacob Zuma is already out. He's at home. He's serving parole time at home. And oftentimes when something like this or something close to this happens, the court would say, I'm not going to speak to the merits of the argument because at this stage it is moot. Is this one such case?
No. And maybe let's backtrack a little bit, because you and I, as political animals, are deep inside these issues. But for the average person who has got legal warfare fatigue, this is what this case is about tomorrow. We all remember that, of course, the Constitutional Court had found the former president guilty of contempt of court for not abiding by its instruction that he should appear before the Zondo Commission. And that's why he's been sentenced to 15 months in jail. He then decided, rather belatedly, and I'll come back to that in a second, that in fact the analysis of the Constitutional Court is wrong in law, and fundamentally the wrongness was that there is rights from a fair trial point of view that have not been respected. He had been found guilty and been sentenced without even making any deposition of arguments for why he should not be regarded as being in contempt, and from a sentencing point of view, being sent to jail. And in terms of international law in particular, when it comes to international covenants, when it comes to civil and political rights, he feels that the majority got it wrong and that the minority was right. And so tomorrow is fundamentally about that. Now, to answer you directly, Oliver, even though events factually have overtaken the Constitutional Court, the president has gone to jail, he is ill, apparently, has got medical parole, the court also sometimes say there are such important legal questions before us that even though, to take a real example, Mr. John Kwelane is no longer with us, we do want to lay down important legal principles as a matter of precedent. And in this instance, I think they have a duty to do so, and they would have puzzled over complicated legal questions that are of enormous public and constitutional interest, and therefore I don't think they're going to kick for touch. I think this is going to be a substantive judgment despite the medical parole.
Is this one of those sort of judgments where there's only one of two possible outcomes? Either the Concord rescinds the application or they don't, or is this a judgment where there's a possibility where the Concord says there's a third potential option that the court might go for? The reason I'm asking that, because I want to link it to perception of fairness by the judiciary and the Concord in particular, because many people feel that Jacob Zuma has been treated unfairly. So if the rescission application succeeds tomorrow, do you think it will lend credence to the perception that the courts have treated Zuma unfairly?
No, and actually I'm being too nice to Zuma by laying things out neutrally from a public education point of view. Let me tell you what I actually think. I think that Zuma doesn't have a leg to stand on legally. His rights to a fair trial were not violated. The court is entitled to decide a contempt of court matter on the papers rather than through a trial that is similar to, for example, a criminal law proceeding, because contempt of court proceedings are a hybrid of civil and criminal processes. And what did Zuma say? He said, I'm not interested in participating. I'm not interested in telling you why I wasn't in contempt. I'm not interested in the first instance, before we even got that far, in going to the commission and answering questions. And the court sucked up to him, Oliver, and said, even though you are a delinquent, well, they didn't say so, but that was the subtext, we want to give you another chance to give us an affidavit to tell us what you think about the sentencing stage in the event we were to find you guilty. He didn't answer on that. Every opportunity he had to fully enjoy his rights to a fair trial, he chose voluntarily to not have his rights enjoyed by himself. And therefore, all the analogies to apartheid-era crimes committed by the apartheid state, where they did not respect black people's right to a fair trial, all of those analogies is just political sophistry. And in fact, the Concorde would have a legitimacy crisis if it were to find in favor of him after he pissed on the Constitution.
One of Dalrymple's arguments, and now that we're in the merits, I think I need to bring this forth. One of Dalrymple's arguments was that this does fall within the ambit of what qualifies to be a review application, because one of the criteria of review application sets out is that there either must be facts or evidence that the court did not consider in the main trial or incorrectly considered in the main trial. And, Dalrymple made that argument and said, well, the court did not consider the fact that Jacob Zuma has a review application for the removal of Deputy Chief Justice Zondo as the chair of the commission outside of the fair trial argument, right? He also then argued that the court did not take into consideration Jacob Zuma's arguments before the Pietermaritzburg High Court, which at the time judgment was still pending. He then says, therefore, there are facts that the court did not consider. Advocate Tebega Ngoetobi then hits back and say, well, the court actually did consider those facts. What's your take on that contestation?
It's the last part that you stopped fleshing out because you're being a good presenter. That Tebega Ngoetobi is spot on, and I can fill out the rest of what you might have said. He's spot on because the weakest part of Dali's entire case, and there were many weaknesses, but the weakest part is to say to the Concorde, hold on, we want to try our luck through a different mechanism to try and get Zuma to not have himself tested for contempt. Can't you wait until we succeed on our quest to have Zondo declared as someone who should have recused himself? The recusal matter is legally distinguishable from the contempt matter. The contempt matter was very simple. The court directs you, vis-a-vis its power as the Constitutional Court, to go to the Commission and answer questions. That is a strict legal duty that you then have to comply with. He didn't comply with it. And in fact, might I add, and I know I'm now sort of jumping to a different part of the timeline, the guy is such a constitutional delinquent, Oliver, that even after he was sentenced to prison, he continued to disrespect the Concorde by not complying with the request to hand himself over within a certain period of time. So every step of the way, the facts fly in the face of Dalrymple's claims about how his client had been treated.
And just the final question on this matter. A lot of, and what Dalrymple did quite ironically was, even though made very easy by Justice Theron and Justice Matlanga on the day, marry himself to the minority judgment of that constitutional court judgment. Why do split judgments matter? I know it to matter for jurisprudential development, but should we have a split judgment tomorrow? That doesn't mean that the law is not final on this matter. Just for the public who, for instance, may have only engaged a split judgment for the first time in this case, why do they matter?
It's such an important question. And on another occasion, when you're back on radio, maybe we can do a sort of law 101 conversation. Firstly, it's very important for Kaya listeners to understand, those who may not know this, that judges, magistrate, judicial officers disagree with each other all the time. And that's unsurprising because law involves language, which requires interpretation, and often interpretation is based on different hermeneutics, different philosophies, different values we bring to the interpretation process. It doesn't mean that the court is divided. It doesn't mean that the majority's view should not be respected. Secondly, The way we resolve this in practice is to say effective law, in other words, what counts as law for purposes of what you and I must comply with, is what the majority on the bench decides.
Right.
And then lastly, the reason we still value the dissent is that sometimes you have beautiful dissent. A mutual friend of yours and mine, Advocate Ramogela, and I were once, you know, reminiscing about some beautiful dissenting judgments that have come out through the Concord. Those are important because the next time a brilliant set of facts that are slightly different to the current case is before the court will have the wisdom of a dissenting judgment from Tukasa Tate that it might be able to withdraw on to apply to a new set of facts.
And I'm just throw a bonus question at you. I'm being a little bit unfair here because I didn't ask you to come on the show to discuss this, but I have no doubt that you can extemporaneously speak on this. President Ramaphosa today opened nominations for the new Chief Justice. Is this a victory for democratic participation, or do you think that you and I, as non-lawyers, are not fit to participate in this?
It's a great question, and I was hoping you would ask it. I didn't want to recommend it and pretend to be your producer of your radio show, because I think it opens up an important set of conversations we must have about public participation in the appointment of someone with enormous constitutional power like the Chief Justice. I think the safeguard against low levels of legal literacy on the part of you and me who aren't qualified lawyers is the fact that there's a panel of legal experts that will make sure they rein us in if we don't apply all the right criteria as the public.
Yeah.
But they will take cognizance of public sentiment and not just paying lip service to it. We can talk about another occasion what that means, the difference between the two. And I think it does give a legitimation to the appointment that is important, Oliver. You'll remember from undergrad courses that one of the biggest theoretical crises for judges is that they are unelected, yeah, unlike our parliamentarians who are elected officials and have natural political legitimacy. And what this process does from the president, and this is a positive reason to have it, is that it helps to give obvious legitimacy to the Chief Justice nomination process. The only spicy thing I would add as a bonus quip is that while I can think of independent reasons like the ones I've just spelled out for why the process is to be welcomed, I think the actual motivation for it lies somewhere else. That President Cyril Ramaphosa is indecisive as hell, and he's simply kicking the can down the road.
Oh, man, I'd love to have this conversation at greater length. Eusebius, thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. Cheers. Enjoy your dinner party. That was Eusebius Makaza, political commentator, political analyst, writer, author, and podcaster. Look, it's a fascinating conversation. We're going to look forward to that judgment tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. I'll read it and hopefully it makes sense to me. Unfortunately, I'm not a lawyer, but we'll call up the lawyers and find out what the terms of that are.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.